this is patient care theory 2, unit 13, part 2A, acid-base balance. So we'll go through this fairly quickly because I know you're going to cover it in AMP and patho. But so pH is a term that represents the something called the negative logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration, and reflects either an acidity or an alkalinity. And the P stands for potential, the H stands for hydrogen, or the potential of a solution to attract hydrogen ions. And changes in pH have very profound effects on both cell function. That can be muscle cell, that can be heart conduction cells, that can be just general cells, and also an effect on medications, certain medications. As a rule, medications don't work as effectively in an acidotic state, and we see, in terms of the acid-base imbalances, we see acidosis far more often than we see alkalosis, which is not a bad thing because it's much easier to treat an acidosis than an alkalosis. You've heard of these people selling alkaline water and trying to shift your pH to the alkaline side. Have you seen those ads for things like that? It is total and utter crap. It's just another scam by unscrupulous people to take your money. It's really, truly, and unbelievable. It's amazing. I sometimes wish I had no scruples because I think I could sell that stuff, you know, or sell oxygen for oxygen parties, stuff like that. But I have a moral and ethical red lines that I just don't cross. So extended pH imbalances are not tolerated very well. And if the pH deviates too far on the acidotic side or too far on the alkaline side, the patient becomes essentially poisoned by their own toxic waste and dies. I love that. Poisoned by your own toxic waste. It's just so graphic. It's almost up there with exsanguinate. So abnormal acid-base balances. So our pH is normally between 7.35 and 7.45. And the acid-base imbalances we see are acidosis or alkalosis. And then the question is it respiratory or metabolic or combined? So an acidosis is a state of excess hydrogen in which the logarithm shows a pH of less than 7.35. So less than 7.35 is an acidosis. Greater than 7.45 is an alkalosis. And you remember last year we talked about the Bohr effect, the Reader's Digest of the Bohr effect, and how your pH shifts with breathing. Do you remember what direction it shifts when you exhale? Think about what you're blowing off when you exhale. Matt? Sorry? Shifts upwards. Yeah, so you're blowing off CO2, which is part of the carbonic acid buffer equation. So essentially you're blowing off acid, so your blood shifts towards the alkaline side. It doesn't necessarily go over 7.45, but when you exhale and you blow off CO2, your pH shifts towards the alkaline side, and which is good because then when you take a breath in, your hemoglobin in an alkaline solution becomes a stronger magnet for oxygen. So then when you take a breath in, oxygen dissolves in blood plasma and very quickly latches on to the hemoglobin on your red blood cells. Right? And then when you get down, when the blood gets down to the tissue level, because CO2 diffuses 20 times more readily than oxygen, what happens at the tissue level is CO2, which is a byproduct of metabolism, shifts from the cell to the bloodstream and causes a shift in the pH towards the acidic side, which is good because hemoglobin then becomes a weaker magnet and releases oxygen. Oxygen comes off the hemoglobin, dissolves in blood plasma, and then shifts into the cells, providing the necessary component for creation of ATP and energy, right? It's a beautiful thing, incredible. Amazing creatures we are. So, we'll get to the implications of that in a minute. So an acidosis would be less than 7.35. And acidosis, like a chronic systemic acidosis or persistent acidosis, can change system functions. You can get decrease of cardiac contractility from acidosis, decrease in vascular response to catecholamines. So when we get a patient in cardiac arrest and you're running an arrest with an ACP, the ACP is going to be giving intravenous epinephrine. Epinephrine is not as effective in an acidotic state, and basically all dead people are acidotic. It's the nature of having anaerobic metabolism, right? They're likely going to be acidotic. How acidotic they are depends on if it was an unwitnessed arrest and they've been down for some time, an unknown time, they're going to be more acidotic. If it was a witnessed arrest and they got CPR right away, they're going to be less acidotic. But the point is, the drugs don't work as effectively in an acidotic state. There'll be diminished response to the effects and actions of certain medications. On the flip side, the alkalosis, which is a pH greater than 7.45, changes in system functions include interference with tissue oxygenation. So if someone was alkalotic, hemoglobin may pick up oxygen readily at the lungs, but hemoglobin tends to hold on to it and doesn't release it as easily at the tissue. And what does that mean? Well, some of you, probably a minority of you, have seen the show Emergency with Johnny and Roy. How many of you have seen that? Anybody? Brock? The only one? That's it, eh? Okay, you guys got to go on YouTube and look for Emergency and look at some old episodes. You can actually buy the DVD with the entire episode. It was a remarkably good show, incredible show. But one of the best things about the show is the medical advisor for the show was Dr. Ron Stewart, who's a Canadian boy. He lives in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. And he's the nicest guy on this planet. If you met Ron Stewart 20 years later, he would remember your first name, your last name, where you worked at the time, what you were doing, whether you're single, married. He's like Rain Man, only without the autism. He's incredible. And he's famous in the United States, like you wouldn't believe. He's so famous amongst paramedics in the United States. He's hardly known at all here in Canada, which is sad. But you go to a conference in the United States, and Ron Stewart comes out on stage, and I've seen him come out on stage, and people give him a standing ovation because of his role with the show Emergency. And he set up the first air ambulance system in Pittsburgh, and it was the best, most sophisticated air ambulance system in the country. He's invented a bunch of medical devices. And he's just a super nice, humble guy. He moved back to Canada. He came to Ontario. He was my medical director at Sunnybrook when I worked air ambulance for a little while. And then he moved back to his home, Nova Scotia, and became the Minister of Health there and took the ambulance services out of funeral homes and private companies and created a provincial ambulance service in Nova Scotia, which still exists today. Just an amazing guy. Anyway, how the hell did I digress onto that topic? Emergency. Coming back to emergency. Okay, so what's the relevance of, what's the danger of someone becoming alkalotic? Well, back in the day when emergency came out, this was in the late 60s, it was routine practice that every time a cardiac arrest occurred, either in the field and was treated by paramedics or in the hospital, they gave them an amp, at least one amp, if not two amps, of sodium bicarbonate. But they were giving sodium bicarbonate without knowing what the arterial blood gases were. So sometimes they were giving it when the patient needed it, sometimes they were giving it when the patient really didn't need it. And what was happening is a lot of those patients, their blood pH was shifting towards the alkaline side, and that was essentially exacerbating the issue with tissue hypoxia, because in an alkaline environment, hemoglobin won't let go of oxygen, won't release it at the tissue level. So imagine you can actually compound hypoxia at the tissue level by administering bicarb, shifting the pH to the alkaline side. So I think it was in the 80s they stopped routine administration of sodium bicarbonate in cardiac arrest, because I remember I took the advanced cardiac life support course for the first time in 1988. So long ago, eh? It's just mind-boggling. It's great. And they had just stopped routine administration of sodium bicarbonate maybe 4 years earlier. So that's the relevance of emergency and Ron Stewart. Now, There are tons of interesting stories about the actors in Emergency. You should watch the show. It's really quite a good show, actually. So Johnny and Roy. Johnny was the younger paramedic. Roy was the older guy. Roy was the nice guy, humble guy. Johnny was the cocky, arrogant guy. And apparently, on the set, he was very, very cocky. And the stories that he tells us now, like Randy Mantooth, who played Johnny, goes to paramedic conferences around the world all the time, and he signs posters. Like, he's an icon in the EMS industry. And Randy Mantooth will tell you that Ron Stewart put him in his place and humbled him. He had him actually witness paramedics on the field and had some talks with him about his arrogance and just kind of shut him down and changed his life that way. It was just, anyway, it's interesting backstories. All right, what else does alkalosis do? It causes abnormal neurological muscular function. So our body is remarkably efficient at maintaining acid-base balance. You know, there's little fluctuations within that 7.35 to 7.45 range, but rarely does it go sort of outside of that, unless people get sick or unless people get medications inappropriately. As an example for sickness, so it's common for renal dialysis patients to have a chronic metabolic acidosis and be hyperkalemic. It's common for patients with any kind of acidosis, like ketoacidosis, diabetic ketoacidosis from hyperglycemia, to also be acidotic and hyperkalemic. And but otherwise, our respiratory system, our buffer system, and our renal system work extraordinarily efficiently to maintain pH. Significant changes in pH above 7.8 or below 6.8 interfere with cell function and eventually lead to death. Now, when you go in the intensive care unit, it'll be really interesting to find out what your patient's blood gases are. It's not uncommon to see ICU patients with pHs below 7. But when they're below 7 for a long period of time, they usually end up with multi-system organ failure. They also end up with DIC, which we've talked about, disseminated intravascular coagulopathy. So you want to ask about that sort of thing. But find out what their gases are. Very interesting. And I would ask the nursing staff, like, what do you do about this kind of acidosis? How do you treat it? Do these patients ever go for renal dialysis to get it corrected, or what do you do? So some examples of imbalances. You can have a respiratory acidosis or metabolic acidosis or combined. Let me ask you this, and I know you know the answer to this if you think about it. Can you think of a condition that would give you a respiratory acidosis? In other words, a condition that would cause you to retain CO2. So if you're retaining CO2, you're not blowing it off. What would cause your minute volume to diminish? Your respiratory rate? Yeah, Chris? Yes, COPD will definitely cause a respiratory acidosis. I wasn't thinking of COPD, but yes, absolutely. What else would, and patients with COPD would typically have a chronic respiratory acidosis, and the metabolic component would compensate for that. So that's a good example. Can you think of another one that would happen more acutely? That would basically, yeah. Not typically. That would be a really, the answer is yes, but that would be a really prolonged asthma attack and a really bad asthma attack. It would give you a respiratory acidosis. Think of another one that's acute. Yeah. Not typically. Time to wake up, Andrea. Think of something that's going to knock out your respiratory drive. It's going to diminish your breathing rate and depth.
Heroin.
Yeah, exactly. Opioids. Yeah, so an opioid will give you respiratory acidosis. Yeah. Metabolic acidosis, we've already talked about. Respiratory alkalosis, metabolic alkalosis, or combined alkalosis, or a number of things. When you vomit, you vomit acids. So if you've got a lot of vomiting going on, eventually you're going to cause a pH shift. This is why it's so important to ask about vomiting, not just for the to gauge the level of dehydration, and to, you know, we want to assess whether they've been taking in water as well. But if they've been vomiting greater than 3 times in 24 hours, that seems like nothing to you or me. But to an elderly person, 3 times, 4 times in 24 hours can be pretty significant. So if they're vomiting a lot, not only are they losing fluid, they're becoming volume depleted, they're becoming dehydrated, but they're also vomiting acids, which means their pH shifts to the alkaline side. At the opposite end, if you're if you've got diarrhea, like constant diarrhea, you're getting rid of bicarb, and you become acidotic. So vomiting can cause alkalosis. Diarrhea can cause acidosis. If it's coming out both ends, then it might be balanced. And trust me, in 5 years from now, you'll really start to think like a paramedic. You'll be sick and you'll be vomiting and you'll be going, getting rid of some acids, that's not good. And then you'll have a big dump with diarrhea and you'll be going, okay, it's balancing things out now. That logic makes no sense at all because you really have no idea what's going on until you settle down, you two. The noisy table is over there normally. No, you weren't. Okay, so acid-base regulation involves the respiratory system, control of PCO2 and with normal respiratory function. It's the fastest, right? So if you had someone with... If we had the ability to measure arterial blood gases or venous blood gases in the field, and we came across someone who had an acidosis, the very first thing we do is we'd look at their minute volume. And if we could increase their rate of respirations or the depth of respirations with positive pressure ventilation, we would do that to blow off carbon dioxide to shift the pH. So it's the fastest means of altering the pH, can do it in 1 to 3 minutes. The buffering system is that carbonic acid buffer equation, that's part of it. And then the kidneys takes the longest, but it's the most effective. So respiration's fastest, buffer system second fastest, kidneys longer, but much more effective than anything else. And so it works by regulating retention or excretion of hydrogen and or bicarbonate. Okay, so this is a carbonic acid buffer equation. We talked about this last semester. If you want to know how acid rain happens in lakes and oceans, it's excess CO2 in the atmosphere combining with water droplets in the air. It slowly drops into the ocean forming carbonic acid. That's the apart from sulfuric acid coming straight out of smokestacks, that's the most common cause of acidity in the oceans and the lakes. And same thing happens in our body. So normal values. Normally the pH is 7.35 to 7.45. PaO2, which is the amount of oxygen dissolved in blood plasma, arterial blood plasma, is 80 to 100 millimeters mercury. And a PaO2 of 80 to 100 typically corresponds with an oxygen saturation of 95 to 100%. And then SaO2, which is oxygen saturation but measured in blood, is 95 to 100%. And PaCO2, rather, is the amount of carbon dioxide dissolved in blood plasma, arterial blood plasma specifically. And it's typically 35 to 45 millimeters of mercury. Right, so I've bolded the ones that we need to know for basic blood gas interpretation, and I'm getting tired too. And bicarb is normally 22 to 28 milliequivalents. This is what fatigue does to you. I know. I've been there. Sad, really. Base excess we won't use, but I'll just tell you, if you want to really master blood gas interpretation, there are tons of really amazing websites. So you just Google arterial blood gas interpretation. And base excess indicates the amount of excess or insufficiently level of bicarb in the system. That's just that component. So the three components we're really interested is pH, 7.35 to 7.45, PaCO2, 35 to 45, and bicarb, 22 to 28. So when it comes to interpreting blood gases, and believe it or not, I learned blood gas interpretation from a company called Mad Scientist Software, and they provided a blood gas interpretation software on a 3.5 floppy disk. Do you remember, any of you remember what a 3.5 floppy disk looks like? Yeah. It's the little icon, the save icon in every word processing software has a little 3.5 floppy disk. So this software, it was amazing, came on a 3.5 disk, 3.5 inch disk, and it was called, it was Mad Scientist Software, and it asked the question, when it comes to arterial blood gases, what's the matter? Is it acidosis or alkalosis? It's a drill. And who done it? Is it respiratory or metabolic? Amazingly simple. So what's the matter? Acidosis or alkalosis? pH tells us what's the matter, right? So the very first thing you look at is the pH. If the pH is less than 7.35, it's an acidosis. If it's greater than 7.45, it's an alkalosis. Really simple, right? Who done it? Is it respiratory or metabolic? Or is it both? And it gets a little nuanced in spots, but we'll talk about that. So PaCO2 or bicarb tells us the who done it. So for example, if you've got an acidosis and the PCO2 is high, then it's probably a respiratory acidosis, right? Because high PCO2, high acid. If you've got a respiratory alkalosis and the PCO2 is low, then you've probably blown off too much CO2. You've probably hyperventilated and it's caused an alkalosis. Okay, so what's the matter? If the pH is below 7.35, we have a acidosis, thanks. If the pH is above 7.45, we have a, shout out loud everybody, alkalosis. Yay. Yeah, only without the entertainment. Without the enjoyment or the booze. Okay.
Not like a concert.
Not at all like a concert. All right, ABG interpretation. Who done it? If the pH is 7.33, which is low, and the CO2 is above 45, then we have an acidosis. What kind of acidosis? Respiratory acidosis, beautiful. If the pH is 7.61, what's the matter? Alkalosis. And the PCO2 is 18? And we have a respiratory alkalosis. I couldn't hear what you said, Lydia, but I could actually read your lips, believe it or not. Lydia's like this. I just knew what she was saying. So if the pH is less than 7.35 or greater than 7.45, and the PCO2 is between 35 and and 45, which is normal, then we have to look at the metabolic component to see who done it. And that's it for that one. And how do I say, let's do another lesson when Nikita is grinning the way she's grinning? Let's call it a day.